Al, if you could raise right now an enormous sum of money and donate it, where would you put that money right now?
Well, on a serious vein, there are two areas, but the first is disease and sickness. I would try and prevent death and try and promote the future of all people to live longer and enjoy the fruits of what Earth can give to all of us. Death has always been something that I have been fascinated with, try to prevent.
He might be the finest quarterback produced in the last 10 years.
Philadelphia Eagles select Donovan McNabb.
And he said, I'm the best decision this organization has ever made.
Yeah, he's a day like this. That's all I need.
Fortunately for me, I didn't lose my life. Didn't lose my job. Football convinced me that life is a team game.
That's right. It's a game for men.
God's mercy. God's mercy.
Rest of your life. Nobody can ever tell you that you couldn't do it.
Was this the final game on the sideline for a great coach?
I want to thank you very much for making my day in the sun so memorable.
Al Davis, born 1929, died 2011. Eulogies written for the Pro Football Pioneer asked a simple question. With all his accomplishments, how will Al Davis be remembered? Would it be as a young coaching genius? As the commissioner who forced the NFL and AFL to merge? As the winner of three Lombardi trophies? As a leader in racial equality? Or was his greatest accomplishment providing the NFL with a much-needed villain?
If there's anything we've ever done that I'm particularly proud of, I would have to say that the perpetuation of the greatness of the Raiders to take a professional football team and give it a distinct characteristic that's different from all others.
The greatness of the Raiders. Some may scoff. But what other pro sports team is instantly identified with a song like this one?
The autumn wind is a pirate, blustering in from sea. With a rollicking song, he sweeps along, swaggering boisterously. His face is weather-beaten. He wears a hooded sash with a silver hat about his head and a bristling black mustache. He growls as he storms the country, a villain big and bold, and the trees all shake and quiver and quake as he robs them of their gold. The autumn wind is a raider, pillaging just for fun. He'll knock you round and upside down and laugh when he's conquered and won.
What other team had more slogans than an ad agency?
Commitment to excellence. There's a commitment to excellence, the greatest players.
We could get the greatest coaches. The great games we've played in.
The flame that would burn brightest here is the will to win.
Is the will to win.
Is the will to win.
Your commitment to excellence and your will to win will endure forever. You were magnificent.
That was just his thing. He didn't have a marketing group come up with that for him. Those were his phrases that he came up with that he believed in.
Just win. Play hard. Try not to make mistakes, but don't worry about mistakes because there's only one thing that counts. Just win.
And what other team had an owner who saw his own wardrobe as a marketing opportunity?
His whole world was pretty black and white when it came to fashion. It was silver and black or white and black, and that's it. You know, he was colorblind. At least that's what we were told, and that's what we always understood it to be.
They were really an advertisement for the Raiders, and he really felt like when people saw him, they needed to see the colors. I think he was so far ahead of his time that he branded a team, and he built a framework for the league to understand what branding was all about.
To know the Raiders is to know Al Davis. They were built and branded in his image. And since his childhood in Brooklyn, that's all he ever wanted.
Because as a young guy,
I had a dream that someday I would build the finest organization in professional sports. And I had a lot of thoughts on how I would do it. I had the inspiration of two great organizations when I was growing up. The Yankees, to me, personified the size of the players, power, the home run, and intimidation and fear. The Dodgers, under Branch Rickey, were totally different in my mind. They represented speed. They represented development of players, a way of playing the game, the Dodger way of playing the game. And I always thought that someone intelligent could take all the qualities, the great qualities of both, and put them together and use them.
That desire led Davis into coaching, where he spent 3 years at the Citadel as an offensive line coach. An opening on the staff of the USC Trojans led him to Southern California. And the launch of the upstart American Football League led him to the Chargers. And coaching legend, Sid Gillman.
Well, I'd known Al for quite some time. As a matter of fact, when I used to speak at coaching schools, Al, a little redhead, would sit, he was a redhead in those days, would sit in the front row. At the end of the lecture, Al Davis would be the first one up to talk to me. And Al was looking for a job. I thought this would be a splendid guy for the staff.
Well, I think he's a coach that Sid had a lot of respect for. He listened to Al when Al had something to say as far as game plan, that type thing. You knew he was going somewhere. He's a bright guy, obviously, and he had his own plan.
3 successful seasons as the Chargers receivers coach would soon lead Al Davis at age 32 to become the youngest man ever named head coach and general manager of a professional football team. Still to come, when did Al Davis first wage war against the NFL?
Generals win the war, but the politicos, the politicians, make the peace.
In 1963, Al Davis became head coach of the woeful Oakland Raiders and guided the team to what was, at that time, the greatest single-season improvement ever.
The coaching staff the year before I came was 1-13, and we went 10-4. So that was the greatest turnaround. I was coach of the year, professional football. I was coach of the year. That was big with me.
Davis took complete control over all phases of the franchise, including changing Oakland's uniforms to resemble the great Army teams he had idolized during the 1940s.
The precision of the Black Knights of the Hudson, their quickness, the explosion with Blanchard and Davis has always left an indelible impression on me.
Davis also altered the team's culture with ideals that would become permanent Raider beliefs.
I had had the advantage to be with Sid Gillman at San Diego, but I had certain philosophies of my own that had to become part of whatever I was to do. And that was, number one, what I call the vertical game. We were going to stretch the field vertically. When we came out of the huddle, we weren't looking for first downs. We didn't want to move the chains. We wanted touchdowns. We wanted the big play, the quick strike. It's number one to say you want to do that. It's number two to say that you have the players to do it. But it's number three to do it. To do it on first down of any football game for that defense that you're playing against. For those cornerbacks who play out there on the corners to know that the Raiders are coming at you. They're coming at you on top, and they've got the speed to do it, and they will do it. It's like having the bomb and being willing to drop it. The adage that goes around in professional football, and I hear everyone say it, take what they give you. That all sounds good to everybody, but I always went the other way. We're going to take what we want.
Davis's combative nature and interest in military tactics also led to a full defensive makeover.
Well, the defensive theory evolved early on in the 60s to, number one, pressure. Put pressure on the pocket. We do believe that this is a game, psychologically, of intimidation and of fear. I don't mean cowardly fear, but fear. And I think this, that somewhere within the first 5 to 10 plays of the game, the other team's quarterback must go down, and he must go down hard. That alone sets a tempo for a game. And diversification of defense and the utilization of your corners in a bump-and-run principle. We used to call it the press. We got the idea from John Wooden when he had his great zone press with his great basketball teams where they picked you up as soon as you took the ball out and they pressured you. And we got the idea, and we called it press, and I think it was Don Shula who started using the word bump-and-run, and so we changed to bump-and-run.
A job change came for Davis in 1966. When his league turned to him to lead them in escalating off-field fights between the AFL and NFL.
We felt that the league had probably gotten to a point where we needed a different level of participation by our commissioner, our leader. And so a decision was made in 1966, and Al Davis became the commissioner of the American Football League.
And so in 1966, the great rivalries continue. The great new stars who came into the American Football League in...
Davis was somebody who had perhaps read The Art of War one too many times, but he was somebody who had a very military mindset. And his idea was, this is a guerrilla war.
When AFL star Pete Gogolak suddenly jumped to the NFL, it gave Davis the opening to launch a counterattack.
The NFL... fired a shot with a revolver, and Al Davis responded with a machine gun. And that's exactly what he did. He went out, he said, all bets are off, and they went out and they began signing NFL players to future contracts with the American Football League.
All the AFL needed to do was sign a few stars, and they were going to, as Davis put it, bring the NFL to its knees.
We had about 4 or 5 quarterbacks all lined up. 3 or 4 of their other great players had signed, and it was a preliminary strike to let them know what's going to happen if they continue this.
Al's exit strategy was not a merger. Al's exit strategy was take them on, become their equals, then become better than them.
And then he felt he was undercut because Hunt and Tex Schramm from the Cowboys cut a merger deal behind his back. The last guy they told about the merger was Davis. And when he found out, he was really pissed off. He said there's no reason we had to settle for any of the things we did. We had him whipped.
I've always said that the generals win the war, but the politicos, the politicians make the peace.
His interest in being commissioner ceased once there was not a war to fight. He wanted to go back to football, and so I think he was quite happy to do that and go back to competing with the Raiders and trying to win the Super Bowl.
After Davis returned to the front office, Oakland dominated, posting the most wins during the final 3 years of the AFL's existence.
1967 was my first year, and that was George Blanda's first year, Willie Brown, it was his first year. Gene Upshaw was our number one draft choice, and we were a real good team. We won the AFL that year, and we went to the Super Bowl. That was Super Bowl II.
I thought that that was the beginning of a real dynasty for us, that team was going to get better and better, and we drafted well, and I thought there were going to be a lot of Super Bowls.
Coming up, the Raiders win their first world championship.
And to the people and the community in Oakland, we're proud to represent you and we intend to hold it.
And find out why once you're a Raider, you're always a Raider.
look around this organization and you see a lot of it. You know, the number of guys who are still with this organization, who is here in the 60s, such as myself and Willie Brown.
Al Davis had already served as an assistant coach, head coach, commissioner of the AFL, and general manager. In 1972, he became the managing general partner in Oakland. For the rest of his life, Al Davis embodied the Raiders while thriving in his role as the boss.
The organizational chart flowed Al and then everybody below him. You know, you knew he was there. You could smell him. I mean, he had, wore a distinctive cologne, so you knew he was in the building. And, you know, he was not going to be shy about what he wanted. I think sometimes there was frustration in that his expectations of what he wanted, they were unrealistic at times.
Right from the start, you knew that it wasn't just the coaches who were looking at things. It was Al himself.
During the time I played here, Al was on the practice field every Wednesday and every Thursday, and his presence was felt.
We could be sitting on our helmet or maybe not paying attention on the sidelines, but as soon as Al Davis walked onto the football field, everybody would come to attention. Well, get off your helmet and get on one knee or stand and start paying attention. Al had that ability, and I call that fear and respect. He carried that, I think, to every player that's ever played for him.
Davis rewarded respect with loyalty. Of all the slogans he coined, the most genuine might be, once a Raider, always a Raider.
Look around this organization and you see a lot of it. You know, the number of guys who are still with this organization, who is here in the 60s, such as myself and Willie Brown.
I think right now we have probably 15, 20 guys who play for him in their career somewhere along the way, still in the organization.
There was a reason for Davis's devotion. It stemmed from the biggest regret of his life.
1961, I got a call about 5 in the morning, and it was my brother telling me that my father had died. And to this day, that is the one thing that stands out in my life that I come back and focus on, because, quite frankly, I had never really gotten a chance to thank him for all the things he did for me and all the opportunities he gave me. So I made a vivid memory of that, but I also made a promise that I would not hold back to the people who I really do love and let them know while they're living about my respect and approach to them.
When someone passed, he would tell me, well, I need you to go to the service and I need you to take this check to the family. I mean, this happened many, 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 many times that he would do things like that.
My pop's 93 now. When dad was 80, he was going to have a bypass. And how Al found out, I have no idea. And he goes, you get him on a plane, it's all set up for him at the Mayo Clinic, and they're going to take care of that. I go, Coach, I can't. He's 80. He doesn't even get in my car to go to the doctor. I have to drag him. I can't do that. He says, I'm going to have that doctor fly into your place. I'm like, Coach. And then after the surgery, he would call me every single day to see how my dad was doing. I'll also say this. If, for some reason, he thought that you crossed the line, and you could have been there for 35 years, but if you crossed the line on him, it was over.
Davis was known for his feuds, including one with Hall of Famer Marcus Allen. But 9 other Hall of Famers requested he introduce them for induction in Canton, making Al Davis, by far, the most frequent presenter at the Hall of Fame.
You know, talking about loyalty and what a guy Al Davis was, I said that he's the guy that, you know, if you had anything happen, you had one phone call, who would you make that phone call to? I said it would be Al Davis. I got voted into the Hall of Fame. I had a phone call to make for a presenter, and I called Al Davis.
No one realized the loyalty of Al Davis more than John Madden. In 1969, Davis surprised the football world by naming the 32-year-old Madden head coach of the Raiders, sparking a lifelong friendship.
He's someone who helped me build this organization into the greatness that it was. We were like kids. We had our dreams. He had a big ego. I had a big ego, but we were smart enough to know that we wanted the same thing.
There was no one between Al and I. And so anything that I wanted, I didn't have to go to any general manager or anyone. There was just the two of us. And Al Davis never once turned down anything that I ever wanted.
Madden reached 100 wins faster than any coach in NFL history, while leading Oakland to 8 playoff berths in 10 seasons. Under Madden, the Raiders also played in some of the most famous and controversial games of all time. Of the 1970s played in several games with names. Their most important game was simply called Super Bowl XI.
And he looks and throws, intercepted by the Oakland Raiders, Willie Brown at the 30, 40, 50.
Strange group of players, Kurt. I think the Oakland Raiders, more than anybody else, have what you'd call a really conglomeration of misfits, because these guys came from everywhere, and somehow they put it together. Awful lot of credit's got to go to John Madden and I guess Al Davis, too.
The Oakland Raiders were magnificent on that football field today, and to the people and the community in Oakland, we're proud to represent you, and we intend to hold it. Thank you.
Coming up, Al Davis gives underdogs shelter.
We may take a player in who has been a failure somewhere else, and they have done great.
If there was one thing that Al Davis loved, it was an underdog. He enjoyed creating opportunities for overlooked players, even at the expense of his own team.
This is 1974. Pittsburgh started Joe Gilliam in the game, and we beat him something like 17-0. After the game, Terry Bradshaw came in the locker room and said to me, "Can you get me out of here? Can you trade for me?" And I said to him, "Listen, I love you. I got enough problems. I got Stabler. I got Blander. I still had LaMonica. And I can't get you, but let me put in a good word for you." Chuck Knoll had been a close friend. And I, probably one of the dumbest things I've ever done, said to him, "Why the hell don't you play Bradshaw and stop playing Gilliam? Bradshaw can win for you." He put Bradshaw back in the lineup.
They beat us in the championship game in 74. They beat us in the championship game in 75. And we had our hands full with the Steelers from then on. Because good me raised his hand and suggested that they ought to start Bradshaw.
Davis believed in giving players a fresh start in an era when few franchises offered second chances.
In the old days, you know, usually when you got let go, that was it. They used you up and moved you on, except if Al wanted to take you.
We may take a player in who doesn't have good social habits or has been a failure somewhere else, but it's predicated on bringing them into an environment that can inspire in them the will to do great. And they have done great.
There were a lot of retreads with the Raiders, and he'd get great use out of them.
Snap back, looking right. Now he'll never look again. Not this time, as Alzado gets another sack.
How can I use a guy like Billy Cannon? How can I use a guy like Willie Brown? How can I use a guy like Matusek? I mean, on down the line, you know, he had a plan when he brought those guys in there.
Even the bad guys that nobody else wanted end up going to the Raiders and becoming great ball players. And I think it was, you attribute that to Al Davis dealing with people.
When you have to lead men, you don't do unto others as you would have others do unto you. You do unto them in a paramilitary situation as they want to be done unto. You have to treat them the way they want to be treated.
In the 1960s and 70s, minority players and white players weren't always treated equally.
Certain positions, you saw no black players. Most offensive lines, you had white players. Quarterback position, there were none.
I came in the league in 1967. We used to say, well, we can have a convention of the black offensive linemen in a phone booth. There just wasn't that many of us doing it.
And the Raiders, behind these blockers, Shell, Upshaw, they block out the sun.
We went into many of the predominant black schools to take a lot of the players. We called it an untapped reservoir. We wanted to win. We wanted the best players. We weren't interested in who they were or exactly where they came from.
That included Eldridge Dickey, the first African-American quarterback to be drafted in the first round.
Gosh, that was a huge step for Al Davis. There was so much against him for that. They had tapped and got tackles and receivers, but here you're talking about a position where it has been orientated that this, quote, black man cannot lead. I could see what he was seeing. I could see him seeing beyond complexion. Al was saying, let it go. You're stifling the growth of the game.
Almost two-thirds of the NFL players are black, but there has never been a black head coach in pro football.
The decisions as to who gets to play and who gets to coach are made by white owners and white general managers.
I just don't know that owners have looked at black coaches as people they can be comfortable with.
But those white traditionalists who controlled the game are being replaced by more pragmatic owners led by Al Davis of the Los Angeles Raiders.
I think if any guy will be able to do it, it'll probably be Al Davis. I'm for you, Al. My hat's off to you.
I've always said it's not important to be consistent. It's important to be right.
In 1989, Davis made Art Shell the first African-American coach of the modern era.
One thing you got to understand is the only way to play this game is you got to get down in the dirt and get nasty. Let's go.
He said, but I want you to know one thing. I'm not hiring you because you're black. I'm hiring you because I feel that you are the best possible candidate for this job at this time.
In his Raider debut.
He is no longer the first black coach in the NFL. He's just a winning coach right now.
They asked Art Shell, how does it feel to be the first minority coach? And he said, I'm not the first minority coach. And they looked at him in puzzlement, and they said, well, who was? He said, Tom Flores was the first minority coach.
10 years earlier, Davis had hired Tom Flores, a Hispanic coach with Raiders heritage. As a player, he was the first quarterback of the Raiders. As a coach, his roster included Jim Plunkett, a former number one overall pick, who had failed in New England and San Francisco.
I think the Raiders was the only organization who could have really pumped some life in Jim Plunkett.
Back is Plunkett. Time to throw. Deep to the end zone to Branch. It is caught by Branch. Touchdown, Raiders.
Here's a guy that I watched in New England get beat to a pulp. And all of a sudden, he's Super Bowl MVP.
Jim Plunkett, climaxing his greatest comeback his sports has ever witnessed.
I am a great coach. I'm a great coach.
This was our finest hour. This was the finest hour in the history of the Oakland Raiders. To Tom Flores, the coaches, and the great athletes, you were magnificent out there today.
You got 30 minutes of
Raider
football, baby. 30 minutes of Raider football, and it's all ours. No let-up. No let-up. Let's go. Go!
Isn't just a great coach in our league. He's one of the great coaches of all time. When you have great coaches, then after you have great coaches, you get great players.
Just win.
You have a great organization. And you tell them one thing.
Just win.
Just win.
The Prince came calling. Prince Pete Rozelle. He had a silver slipper. He tried it on, and the only man it fit was Al Davis.
How did the NFL's man in black describe himself?
Devious, ruthless, cunning.
Al Davis's dark side, next. For Al Davis, just win, baby, meant sometimes bending the rules.
I'm going to dominate, if I can, other than maybe life or death, the things that I want. I'm going to dominate them.
Raider rule number one, cheating is encouraged. Raider rule number two, see rule number one.
We had a guy named George Anderson who was our trainer. George was an expert in pets. Probably most of them illegal. What he did was he took the stuff from the, you make KSI, and then he molded it for me. What I essentially had was two casts. So when I hit somebody, boom, that was my first shot, right to their eye. I could take them down if they hit them just perfect.
I mean, if they were illegal or not, you know, I'm not sure. Anything that you're wearing has to be checked by the umpire in the pregame warm-up. Of course, you could not wear it in a pregame warm-up and then put it on for the game. I know that.
If they were to use the word devious just by itself, it would be annoying for the moment. But when you throw it in, they like to throw it in with, as I said, brilliant, genius, winner, devious, ruthless, cunning. No, I'll take it.
Take it. Al Davis loved it. He liked being the rogue, playing the villain.
This was Al Davis's character. Clearly, this guy was a carnivore from the get-go.
The Raiders' red meat was always the rough stuff. And fights were frequent occurrences.
And he's brought down at the 28-yard line. Here's a flag. And there's Ben Davidson being jumped on by one of the Chiefs. Two more Chiefs come in. There's a big pileup. Davidson and Taylor are going at it. Here come all the Raiders. Holy Toledo, it's a free-for-all.
I just like to fight. I went to Bowling Green. If I threw a punch, they send me back to New Jersey. When I was with the Raiders, if I threw a punch, that was good, as long as it was at the right guy.
One thing they'll do is take a swing at you. If you hit them good, they'll take a swing. There's four or five guys that are demented on that team.
Short fuses went a long way with the Raiders, and playing with a clenched fist was a point of pride. It also meant open season on stars of opposing teams like Lynn Swann.
The blow was illegal, delivered with what I would seem to be some type of malice.
To some, the hits were criminal. To the Raiders, just part of the game.
Chuck Knoll said that they were the criminal element of the NFL, but that was the way that those guys played.
They played that way because Al Davis wanted it that way. The harder the hits, the more the Raiders' reputation grew. Truth is, the Raiders never did play well with others. And Al Davis was never a favorite of other owners. He didn't help matters when in 1982, he sued the NFL to move his team to Los Angeles.
I think his entire life since the merger has been consumed with getting back at the National Football League.
The thing that disturbed me most of all was the bad faith and fair dealing. For 3 years, I waited to hear Commissioner Ozell finally tell us the reason that he wanted to split up this territory amongst the owners. They wanted it for themselves.
I feel very strongly that he is wrong, that he's doing something treacherous for this league.
What do you think of Al Davis trying to come to Los Angeles?
Well, I don't care to discuss that. That's better get that from Al Davis.
Davis was never a popular figure because he's an abrasive kind of guy. And his insistence on dominating and winning everything tends to rub a lot of people the wrong way.
Doing warm-ups before the game, he would come around and walk around our team. And he would say things like, how you doing today, you know, you're looking sharp. And you know he didn't really mean it. He was coming over to get an edge. And I thought that was pretty crappy.
As a former head coach of the Raiders, Mike Shanahan knew just how to deal with his old boss's tactic.
We're on a 10-yard line and we're going out of the end zone. And Al is about the 25 or 30-yard line out in the numbers, just with his hands folded and, you know, watching our team. And the player saying, hey, coach, we can't run anything over there. Tell them to get out of the way. I said, Elvis, I said, throw a go route. And if you happen to get the ball close to that guy in the white outfit over there, I said, you won't bother me.
So Elvis takes the ball and throws it as hard as he can at Al Davis's head. The last second, Al ducks out of the way, and it almost hits him. He looks over, and he sees Mike, and Mike's over there waving at him.
And he flips me off. Flips me off back to the huddle because he probably knew where it came from. But from that time on, I've never seen him on that side of the 50.
We just do that if it's Al Davis. We don't get the X.
When you're fighting all the time, you're fighting with the commissioner, you're fighting to move to L.A., you're fighting in court, you're fighting with the city of Irwindale, you're fighting with the city of Oakland and the county of Alameda. When it's always a fight, I just believe that saps organizational energy. And I also believe that when there's so much paranoia festering and this everyone's against us.
As far as good faith, there's no question in my mind that I never got the same treatment than anyone else got in their respective cities from the very beginning.
That keeps you from asking the hard questions as an organization.
Like, how do you fire head coaches at the rate of nearly one a year for the past decade? Or set a mark for losing that may never be matched? Up next, find out how the team for all decades turned the last one into a lost decade.
As Marie Lombardi once wrote Caroli and I, that's Carol, my wife, a note after we had won our first Super Bowl, enjoy it now because fame is fleeting. And she wrote again, enjoy it while you can.
Al Davis often spoke of the torch that lights the way for the Oakland Raiders. But in 2001, that flame began to flicker. After the Tuck Rule game, Davis traded head coach John Gruden to Tampa Bay. In 2002, the Raiders made it to the Super Bowl for the first time in two decades. There, they were beaten by a familiar face.
The dagger's in! We're going to win the Super Bowl!
Still, it was easy to envision Davis soon accepting another Lombardi trophy. In the new millennium, however, his trips up to the podium took on a far different tone.
Bill Callahan, as he carries the torch.
He carries the torch for us all now.
Guy who I'm tapping, and the Raiders are tapping to lead us back.
I say it with pride. I want you to meet,
ladies and gentlemen, Norvell Turner.
Darch Hill.
Tom Cable.
Then we can all feel good about this.
Yeah, well, great. No, you feel good about it, that's all. Just got to win. Passion.
In Oakland, good feelings didn't last long, nor did coaches. Not with at least 11 losses in seven straight seasons, an NFL record.
This morning, I called Lane and told him that he no longer is the head coach of the Oakland Raiders, and I'm dismissing him with cause.
He was so into trying to get this team turned around. He was trying so many things.
I just want to win, baby. That's it.
Commitment to excellence.
Davis tried what worked in the past, but high-priced cast-offs went bust, as did high-profile draft picks. Other selections raised eyebrows, like the kicker taken in the first round.
Big, physical. It was the New York Yankees and it was the Brooklyn Dodgers, and that's really who Sebastian Janikowski was. He could hit the home run.
When he drafted somebody and they thought, well, that was a dumb pick, he didn't care.
The Oakland Raiders select Darius Heyward Bay.
Inconsistent hands. That is way earlier than he should have been picked.
It sure seemed like his eye for talent jumped the shark, but in retrospect, did it? You get Jacoby Ford deep in the 2010 draft, and you get Denarius Moore in the fifth round of the 2011 draft.
It is caught by Denarius Moore!
You see those guys play, it's tough to say, wow, he's completely lost his touch.
Maybe his was still one of the game's great minds. But as the old coach approached his 80s, it was getting harder and harder to stay on the sidelines.
I think he was in a lot of pain. He always wanted to show strength. Even in times of despair, he always wanted to be the strength of the organization. No one knows what it's like to be in those shoes and to feel like you can't do the things you used to be able to do.
In 2011, Davis passed the torch one final time, hiring Hugh Jackson, who called Al Davis coach.
When you can have talks with your boss about the actual X's and O's, it's the first place I've been dealing with the owner where I can do that. There's nobody else that I've ever had to draw anything on the board for. That's why I call him coach, because he can still talk football with me.
On October 8th, 2011, Al Davis passed away.
Al, we love you. We know that you're watching over this team. We love you. And we're going to keep playing. We're going to keep playing like Raiders for you. We're going to keep honoring this man all year.
You guys know what this is for, man. Love the guy. It's on you, Jason.
Let's go, man. Let's go. Win on three. One, two, three. Win.
Houston, the day after, the Raiders fell behind before the autumn wind began to blow.
Hugh clearly was, I'm going after this, in Al's memory.
The direct snap on Cartwright, first down. They fake the punt.
I'm not going to play this conservative game and just try to eke out a win.
Trust in the players. Players will make plays. Players that were unconventional picks.
Catch it with Bay, break a tackle, and you're gone. He broke it.
Here comes Darius Heyward Bay to make a play and turn into what Al thought he could be.
Touchdown, Raiders!
Hey, I want to finish, baby!
He took a kicker. Why would you do that? here comes the big field goals, long field goals, powerful field goals, the type of kicker that Al envisioned him to be.
He has made three from 50 yards today.
Here we go, to win the game or lose the game. It's all right here. Matt Schaub out of the gun. First and goal. Back. Final play. Time. He can run for it. He pumps now. He throws. It's intercepted by Michael Huff. The Oakland Raiders have won the game.
On the game's final play, the Raiders had only 10 men on the field.
If I'm pitching that script, when they read that, they take a pen and go, give me a break. Al was on the field. He was the 11th guy. It's Hollywood.
Hugh Jackson, Tom, is just sobbing into his hands.
They found a way to do it. And in the end, it was just win.
Hardball win, man. Hardball win, man.
Losing that man hurt me more than you know. But you know what? Just like I told you, I know he loves you guys. Just like he loves his coaching staff and his organization.
Last question. What do you mean when you say the greatness of the Raiders is in the future?
We have young people in very key spots now running our organization. While those people can use the past as a guide and can live in the tradition and the history of the organization, someone has to take this group into the future and make sure that they have greatness.
Davis often spoke of the torch. Now, his legacy will light the way for the franchise he made great. He was the only man to be an assistant coach, a head coach, a GM, a commissioner, and an owner. But perhaps the only title that truly matters is this. Al Davis was, and will always be, a Raider.
Just win, baby.